Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
It has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore on
a big stop! Oh, brother!
Lead Toledo Artis. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead!
Hello and welcome back to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason Mann, and with me as usual is Rich Kraich. Rich, great to be back with you.
Yeah, ready to go here. Got some more playoffs. Yeah. This damn Russell guy is in a lot of playoffs.
He is in a lot of playoffs. So we are going to talk about the remaining series of his careers, the only ones that we have not covered against the Knicks and the Pistons from 67 through 69. So obviously, the Knicks are going to be one of the are about to be a team that would be really important in the early 70s. The dynasty word is sometimes thrown around there a little bit for them. Maybe not quite what we would call a dynasty, but we're not going to parse the word dynasty here. That's not not what we do. But we will talk more about the Celtics about the Knicks in some upcoming shows in our summer series that will be coming up on looking at some of the greatest teams of the 1970s and also looking at some of the great mysteries of the 1970s, sort of exploring that. So look forward to that coming up at the over the summer. But right now we'll talk about the Celtics before they became a great team. First, we start with the 1967 first round series. The Celtics won it 3-1. This was actually the first time the Knicks had been in the playoffs since 1959, which, you know, for a team, for a league that for that time had either 8 or 9 teams in it, it's kind of a remarkable accomplishment.
It's not easy to miss the playoffs that easily in this era of the NBA, but they were able to do it. So
yeah.
Congrats to the Knicks.
Yes. So Boston won 60 games that season. The Knicks, meanwhile, won 36 games. And you had a nice little tidbit of just how bad they were.
They were bad. They were one of only 33 teams all time to make the playoffs with a -2 or worse SRS. And theirs was a -2.74, so almost close to -3. SRS, which is not good. Yeah, so they're one of 33 teams all time when there's a lot of teams that make the playoffs, by the way, particularly in the last, 20 to 30 years. So to be one of 33 is a good distinction or a bad distinction. But
right. And granted, like they actually, I mean, again, they had talent that would eventually become, very good. But, they were still young. I mean, they had like 3 or 4 drafts in a row of like, really great players, Willis Reed, Clyde Frazier, Bill Bradley, all those guys, but it would take a while for them to obviously gel into, and then they had to make some trades as well that were important that we'll talk about a little bit. But to get here, Boston, they would beat the Knicks here, and then they would end up losing to the Philadelphia 76ers, who we talked about in our previous show, breaking the streak of 8 consecutive titles. The key Celtics for the team, Bill Russell was in his first year as a player coach, and as you noted, his numbers kind of stayed consistent from the prior year, even though he was reaching the end of his run. 11.7 points per game, 18.6 rebounds per game, so was down. How about the rest of the team?
Yeah, the rest of the team, Sam Jones, he led the team with 22.1 points per game. Jen Havlicek, 21.4 points per game for him. Bailey Howell, he was an all-star who came over from Baltimore, and he fit in quite nicely because he had 20 points per game and 8.4 rebounds per game. So they will definitely take that. So not bad at all. As far as the Knicks, they were a super young team. They only had one player above 30 years old at that point, and it was Dick Barnett, and he was exactly 30. So not necessarily a veteran team, but that's okay. They were building. Willis Reed, he led the team 20.9 points per game, 14.6 rebounds per game. And then Walt Bellamy just under him at 19 points per game and 13.5 rebounds per game.
Yeah, and the Knicks actually they won Game 3 for their first win in Boston since 1962. The home crowd actually booed Russell during the game, which those
tough crowd.
Yeah, no offense, guys, but Celtics fans from the time who might be listening.
Yes, of course. Yeah, all of our
you guys were, maybe could have been a little bit more understanding toward the Celtics during that time, Russell in particular, but. Reed scored 38 points in that game to help the Knicks to victory in that game. But in the final game of the series, Sam Jones scored 51 points as the Celtics dominated the Knicks 118-109. At the time, he was the sixth player in NBA history to score more than 50 in a playoff game. Now 20 have done it. So still a pretty elite company for Sam Jones. I believe he's the only – this was certainly the only Celtic at the time to have accomplished that. The top guys, talk about the sort of the young crop of guys that the Knicks had at the time. They had Willis Reed, who was 24. Walt Bellamy, who was 27, would be traded soon. Cassie Russell, who was 22. Dick Van Arsdale, who was 23 and would be traded. They didn't really have most of the key guys who would be, coming in over the next few seasons. Frazier wasn't there yet, and Bill Bradley wasn't there yet. So this was really, Reed and Russell were really the two key guys who would, of course, become, part of their future.
Yeah, absolutely.
The 1968 first round, the Celtics beat the Detroit Pistons 4-2. This was the first time the Pistons had been in the playoffs after a 4-year drought. The team had struggled mightily under 24-year-old player coach Dave DeBuscher, which is just kind of crazy that the
a little young.
Yeah, that they were that the NBA that an NBA team had a 24-year-old as their coach, even though Dave DeBuscher was obviously smart and well regarded. It was still pretty wild that he had done that, and he was actually replaced as the coach late in the 67 season. So was still playing on the team, but was no longer the coach of the team. Dave Bing, who was from the DC area where Red Auerbach was from, he had actually known Auerbach since he was 12 years old. And it was like his relationship with Russell. He was sort of like, he was always hoping that Russell would at least acknowledge that he existed. And Russell basically ignored him for the very early part of his career until Bing had established himself, which was kind of funny, given Russell's, his senior status, I guess, at that point, was like, I'm not really gonna, give you anything until you show yourself as being worthy of me, giving something to you. So, before the 68 playoffs, Russell actually canceled practice and had a long team meeting, which, everyone was trying to air out their grievances just to kind of give, everyone a little bit of a way to kind of clear the air and all that good stuff. And also Russell was battling insomnia during that time, which he battled through kind of the later part of his career and was especially bad during this time. One of kind of the reasons why he started to really realize like, hey, I'm toward the end. This is not good for my health type stuff. So, so as far as the records go, Boston was 54-28. They had a 3.87 SRS, which was the lowest for the Celtics since 55 before Russell got there. Detroit was 40-42. Playoff paths, the Boston would, after beating the Celtics, they would gain revenge on the 76ers, as we talked about last series, winning in 7 games before defeating the Lakers in the finals, which we talked about previously as well. So. So who were the key Celtics and Pistons during the series?
Yeah, the key Celtics is actually one of the better balanced Celtics teams ever. You have Bill Russell, who's still dominant on the defensive end and rebounding end, but was coming a lot less of a scoring threat. 12.5 points per game, 18.8 rebounds per game. So you're starting to see a little bit less there. But other guys are emerging. You have Sam Jones. He's got a team-leading 21.3 points per game. John Havlicek, 20.7. And then Bailey Howell, who continues to acclimate himself quite well to the team, 19.8 points per game, 9.8 rebounds per game. As far as the Pistons, your key is, of course, Dave Bing. In only his second year, he becomes the unquestioned team leader and really good on court production as well. 27.1 points per game, 6.4 assists per game. Happy Hairston, 18.8 points per game, 10.1 rebounds per game. And then Dave DeBuscher, no longer saddled with being the coach, does quite well. He has 17.9 points per game, 13.5 rebounds per game.
Yeah, and sort of the other kind of key guys for the Pistons during this time, Terry Dischinger, who he had missed a couple years with military service. He'd come back though and played really well. He was a three-time All-Star before coming to the league, and he's one of those guys who really stands out if you kind of look at it like the advanced stats per minute stuff, like win shares. He ranks really high, and you had kind of a pretty good standout career, especially before the military service. After military service, it wasn't quite as strong, although he was still a pretty good player for the Pistons of the late 60s and early 70s. Also Jimmy Walker as well, who had a couple all-star years in the 70s, and the Pistons generally were not from the mid 50s until really the Bad Boy years, they were generally not a good team, but they had a couple of pretty good years with Bing and later with Bob Lanier in tow, but were kind of bedeviled with inconsistency. The only other guy was Eddie Miles, who was nicknamed the Man with the Golden Arm, who was a shooting guard and a point guard, had previously been an All-Star and spent seven or so seasons with the Pistons during this time. So they kind of had some, those were kind of the other key guys who were sort of part of the team during this time. As you mentioned, they didn't accomplish a lot, but hey, they were around, they were doing stuff. They're worth noting as well.
Cool uniforms too.
Yes. So as far as the key games go.
Yeah. So game two, Russell is in foul trouble throughout much of the game, and Detroit actually ended up winning. Game three, Dave Bing ignited a third quarter rally to shock the Celtics in Boston. Now, Boston was down 2-1, and Jimmy Walker, he chipped in 22 in that game as well. So you got Pistons. Might be a little upset here.
Yeah.
No. I'm sorry. Havlicek starts at guard in game four. He gets 35-9-9. Russell, using his psychological games, he tells the Detroit players to stay out of the lane. It works because Boston destroys the Pistons 135-110, and they'd never look back. In the final game of the series then, Boston finally puts Detroit away despite Bing's best efforts, because he had 44 in that game. But Havlicek led the Celtics with 31. Sam Jones had 22. And unfortunately, the Celtics moved on. Well, I mean, not unfortunately, but yeah. Unfortunately for the Pistons.
Depending on your point of view.
Depending if you're a Detroit Pistons fan or not, yes. The Celtics moved on. So, but hey, valiant effort.
Yes. So, 1969 Eastern Division Finals, the Celtics and the Knicks. The Knicks made a big trade, trading Walt Bellamy to the Pistons for David Buescher, who allowed Willis Reed to move from power forward to center, maximizing his potential, and DeBuescher fitting in very well in terms of just being another guy who was really a standout passer and a good defender. They also had at this point had made Red Holzman their coach, and he was obviously one of the great coaches in NBA history, and was there for the entire dynasty, and was kind of developed a good system for the team to play under. When Bill Bradley had also joined the team during this time, and when he met Russell first quizzed him about the history of Cecil Rhodes. Bradley famously having been a Rhodes Scholar. And then Bradley said, well, I knew what he was saying. He was talking about taking a Rhodes Scholarship from a racist diamond miner, just talking about the challenge, that Russell, of course, Bradley coming in as the great white hope and, being part of like this, racist institution, or as far as like this, well, this institution founded on this, this racist guy and kind of what that meant. But Bradley and Russell did have a friendship and were, had a good relationship, but it was sort of like Russell initially giving him a little bit of like, I understand what this is about and you should understand what this is about too. And sizing each other up, I guess. Well, Russell sizing Bradley up, I think, more than anything. So interesting observation that I thought there. The Knicks won 6 of 7 during the regular season here, so looking like they were pretty good. They had a 54-28 record. Boston was 48-34. Boston had defeated Philadelphia in the opening round, which we talked about in a previous show. The Knicks had actually defeated the number one seeded Bullets in the opening round, which was actually pretty big. Would have been a pretty big upset at the time. I don't know if anybody was injured for the Bullets during that series or anything, but the Bullets that year had been led by the Wes Unseld, who was the Rookie of the Year and the MVP. So that's sort of an interesting result. And then and the Bullets actually and the Knicks would, I think, face off in the next five straight playoff
that
series,
right,
from
yeah.
69 to 74, either five or six in a row. Yeah, they played a lot. Yeah, I don't see any. I don't see anyone particularly who was injured during
just
that
upset,
series.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were just upset. That's an interesting result because we'll dig more into that one. I don't know the exact particulars of that one, but anyway. So who are the key players for each team?
Well, the Celtics, don't have to tell you too much, but yeah. Bill Russell was one of them. This is his final year as a player slash coach, and he saw his scoring average dip below 10 for, I believe, the first time in his career, 9.9. His rebounds, pathetically below 20, 19.3.
Man.
Jesus. Come on, Bill. Step it up. 19.3 rebounds? Come on. Let's go. Let's get a few more. Let's talk about one rebound a game more and he gets 20. But, you know, John Havlicek, though, no worries. He assumed the team scoring load. He had 21.6. And Bailey Howell continued to be a productive member on 19.7 points per game, 8.8 rebounds per game for him. The Knicks, you're starting to see some developing there. You got Bill Willis-Reed, 21.1 points per game, 14.5 rebounds per game for him. Cazzy Russell, 18.3 points per game. And then Walt Frazier, 17.5 points per game and 7.9 assists per game. So starting to see the emerging Knicks starting to come to form there a little bit with the coach and the team and everybody starting to kind of come together and do a team that we'll talk about, as you said, in the summer. So
yeah. So this was the second year both for Frazier and Bradley. Bradley was obviously he was really hyped coming into the Knicks. He was already books have been written about him. He started at Princeton and was this great player, and he had delayed his basketball career to get his Rhodes scholarship and was just like this guy who had all this hype and then came in and was not exactly the type of player performer that at least at first that Knicks fans had expected. And his scoring wasn't particularly high. And, he ended up developing into a great complimentary player and a guy who, even if you look at the numbers, they're not particularly stout, but everything else suggests that he was, a great defender and a great passer and, great without the ball and that kind of stuff. So yeah, at this point, we have Reed, we got Frazier, Dick Barnett was added. He'd come from the Lakers and was, was a pretty important part of that, of those early teams. And also Mike Reardon, who was, who stuck around with the Knicks for a while, was another guy who contributed, who was a kind of a guard forward, defensive oriented, would later be part of some of those strong bullet teams of the mid to late 70s. So yeah, those are the other kind of the standout Knicks guys there. But as we mentioned, they kind of are at this point basically have all the pieces together as far as being a championship team. And then, another year after this, they would win a championship. So as far as how did the series go?
I think key games, there's not a ton of them, but game four is interesting because Boston eked out a 1-point win. They brought the series then to 3-1. And then the final game was actually a very important, game six. This was the first ever game on primetime national television for the NBA. So a big moment for them, and it was good because you get the influence of New York in there, and it's like, hey, your league exists. Like, hey, like look at this. So definitely cool for them. In this game, Sam Jones aggressively hounded Frazier after Frazier suffered a groin injury. Havlicek hit two key late buckets to seal the series win. It's from Frank DeFord in SI, April 1969. It is ironic but not contradictory that while New York may still be good enough to win the championship, it is also the only team in the league that could suffer such sustained futility. So Frank not giving them a break. Wait a minute. Wait like a year, Frank. Let's see what happens. Like, let's get patient. Let's get a little patient here. But in that same article, Frank said, so Sam came out shooting. He was to put up 31 shots and got free of Russell at the top of the key for the game's first basket. Frazier pushing one hand against a sore muscle to try to still the pain. Dodged Jones manfully, but Sam hit six baskets in the first half, and Russell decided to start him in the third quarter too, which he had seldom done. So Sam Jones had very seldomly started third quarter, but he did it this time. Sam broke it open with five baskets that put him and the Celtics up 10. Moreover, the Knicks often double teamed him, and this left Emmitt Bryant wide open for 19 points. So Emmitt Bryant, of course, not a guy known for huge scoring outputs, but in this time he did. And Sam had 29 on his own. So really, Sam Jones, you look at him as really kind of sealing this victory for the Celtics. And of course, Frank DeFord, he's ready to give up on this. Trade these team. Break it up. Break up this team. They're never going to do it. Fire holds
them. Hot take Frank. You know.
He's pissed. He's like, this team's nothing. Going nowhere. It's over.
There were the two very close games, and then the other games for the most part were sort of 8 and 10 point margin. So, you know, a reasonably tight series throughout. One only really true blowout, game two, Boston with the big win. But, and as we mentioned in previous shows, Sam Jones had sort of, he was at this point, I think 35, 36, and this was his final season, and he had struggled to kind of, you know, play well during the season. And, you know, he and Russell kind of gotten a little bit frustrated, but Sam was finally able to, perform pretty well in the playoffs and lead the team to victory one more time, despite, you know, a lot of struggles, health wise and so forth during the season with nagging injuries and so forth. So, anything else to discuss?
No, I think we're good.
All right, cool. Well, thanks everyone for checking us out. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter by going over at Over and Back NBA. And appreciate it if you leave us a review and rating on iTunes and or Stitcher. We greatly appreciate it. It helps people find out about the show, and it makes us feel good about ourselves. So very important. And thanks for listening, and until next time, we'll be back again soon.